Much, Miss Michelson. So the time is 8:30 a.m. on October 14, 2020, and I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Miss Michelson, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Bohansky?
Present.
Mr. Diner? Mr. Diner?
He's on mute.
Oh, present, sorry.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
We have quorum, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Moving on to the approval of the minutes, is there a motion to approve the regular session and the executive session minutes of the September 16 CSC meeting?
So moved.
Thank you, is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. None opposed, the motion carries. Moving on to case discussion and decision, the Complaint Screening Committee is pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 32-2081 subsection H may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website pursuant to ARS 32-2081 subsection H1. Upon a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431.03 subsection A2 to review confidential records, or A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Galvin. A person or representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement to the committee when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for those who speak. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and requests to speak. Please use only initials for patients or children. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Be advised that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. So with those preliminaries, the complaint to be discussed today is number 21-02 for Nicole Merkin. Dr. Meyer, you are the lead committee member for this complaint. Would you please provide the committee with an overview?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We received a complaint from CR, who was requesting a psychological evaluation from Dr. Merkin at her employer's request due to claims of being stalked and persecuted, multiple difficulties interacting with employees and residents. There was concerns from HR about CR recording interactions with employees and residents, and HR stated they could not find support for the allegations. So HR wanted an opinion with regard to the complainant's ability to safely perform the essential functions of her job, which included navigating interpersonal interactions with her department, working in a public space where tourists and residents frequently pass by. CR was seen in August 2020 and completed a psych evaluation with Dr. Merkin. CR alleged multiple grammatical and content errors, which Dr. Merkin refused to correct. CR also contests the diagnosis. Dr. Merkin submitted a response. She outlined the conditions for the evaluation and the history that CR gave. She noted that the complainant had difficulty providing a detailed history of the events leading to the problems at work.
Uh,
Dr. Merkin noted that she originally quoted a flat fee of $2,000 for the evaluation, which was based on the time she anticipated spending on the case. CR was concerned about the cost, and so Dr. Merkin agreed to a price of $1,700 due to the fact that there were not going to be records to be reviewed or any external contacts that would be needed. CR was seen on a timely basis. When they met, they went over consent. And noted that CR also provided a 60-page document. Dr. Merkin notified her that there would be additional charge based on the previous agreement to review records. CR also asked for the employer to be contacted again, which was not, which was previously discussed as not being a content of the evaluation. Dr. Merkin completed her report, did end up calling the employer and spoke. Dr. Merkin noted that she did not charge for the record review or talking to the employer, and noted that the contact with the employer was for the purpose of providing the opinion about safety return to work, not to acquire further information about the client. Dr. Merkin indicated that she did correct some pronoun errors in the report, but did not feel comfortable making any other corrections to the report based on CR's concerns. Dr. Merkin also noted that she briefly reviewed the 60-page document, but did not find that it substantially added to the findings. She noted that CR reported that she did not take one of the tests, the RAT-5, and Dr. Merkin clarified, and which was also in the report, that one subtest was given. Dr. Merkin noted that the CR's concerns and accusations about the report are consistent with concerns expressed by HR, and Dr. Merkin requested that the complaint be dismissed. This concludes my summary of the case.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer. Is there anyone, Ms. Michelson, who has requested to speak regarding this matter?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We do have a complainant CR present, as well as Dr. Merkin and Dr. Akins, her attorney. We can go ahead and start with CR to see if she would like to make a statement.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Will the complainant in this matter please speak up and state your initials for the record? The committee may have questions for you during this time. Thank you.
CR.
You may proceed.
Okay. I have several things to say. First of all, covering the initial statements earlier today, when we discussed the $1,700 payment, we discussed the three tests, the PAI, the MMPI test, and then an interview. I informed her that I had a written timeline with documentation of emails providing proof of mistreatment from my manager. And the mistreatment is documented in that document. We also agreed on the phone after that initial payment discussion that she would write a preliminary agreement or letter that I could possibly return to work because there was a quick timeline as I had been placed on a leave of absence in order to get this report completed. And so we were trying to help me get back to work so that I could earn an income. And she agreed to write a preliminary letter to help make that happen. And the reason I asked her to call the work is because they would not accept a preliminary letter. They would only accept a written full report. And so I thought that if they spoke with her, it would help to get me back to work. And then also about the RAT5 test, I know I did not take that test. I only took the two, I took one computer test and I took the handwritten bubble test for the PAI and the MMPI. I don't know how the other tests could have been completed. It was never communicated to me that I would be completing that test, and it was not even documented in the email correspondence between me and Dr. Merkin. And then finally, in the delay of this interview, you know, I did my research and I sought out a, you know, a qualified psychologist that I thought was the best for my situation. And I was just expecting a professional report, and she showed up 15 minutes late. I was kind of just upset with her demeanor during the interview. It felt unprofessional. And then to receive the report where she misquoted me as saying, especially this is important because she misquoted me as saying that I was excited to about disappointments, but I said I was excited about this appointment. I was excited to meet with her to move forward. And it seems that her final diagnosis was based on interviewing errors rather than actual testing. And, you know, I've just done my best to document my experience to try to show what I've had happening to me for a long time. But now with a delay, since I did not receive a professional report, I have now been terminated from my job. And, you know, I was just hoping that this could have helped to resolve things, but I'm back to square one. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the committee members have any questions for CR?
Mr. Diner, this is Dr. Meyer.
Yes, Dr. Meyer, please proceed.
CR, thank you for providing the information. The only question I had was, you had said you were going to seek a second opinion. Did you ever meet with another psychologist for an evaluation?
I called and I scheduled another interview. And I sent them all of my documentation and I asked if they could possibly reuse the test that I took. But they came back and told me that it would actually be a lot more expensive to like evaluate what happened in this first interview in addition to the second interview. And so I felt it was more important to finally just resolve this issue before seeking another opinion so that I could have a fresh start.
Okay, thank you. That's the only question I had.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Meyer. So I guess at this point, we will move to Dr. Merkin, and she's present with her attorney, Mr. Akins. Mr. Akins, would you please speak up and state your name and your client's name for the record, and we may have some questions to ask you or Dr. Merkin after your statements are done.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Farron Akins. I'm counsel for Dr. Merkin. I know she has some statement that she would like to present to the board, so let me simply defer any of my comments to her. And if you have questions then either for me or her after that, please let us know. Dr. Merkin?
Sure. Hello. So first off, So first off, I'd like to thank all the members of the committee for allowing me to appear today and address the issues made in the complaint. So thank you. I conducted a psychological evaluation at the request of the client based on concerns expressed by her employer, which were provided to me in a letter. In the letter that I received, it specifically stated a medical report. So at that point, it was to my understanding that I would be providing multiple interviews, psychological testing, a diagnosis, and recommendations. I followed the same procedures for completing that evaluation. That's part of my normal data collection process. And I relied upon multiple sources of information, which is common practice for this type of work. I don't believe I did anything outside the usual range in completing this assessment. The client and I did agree on the limits and scope of what my fact finding would be. That did not include a 60-page document that the client later wanted me to review. However, with respect to the client, I did review the document and I did consider it as part of my evaluation as expressed in an email and at the report. After I collected my data, I spoke to the client's supervisor as the client expressed the importance that her supervisor receive feedback from me as soon as possible regarding her ability to safely return to work. Her supervisor contacted me, left a voicemail, and I returned his call once I got the client's authorization to do so. I explained to her supervisor that at this point, I had not seen or observed any indication that the client was a safety risk should she return to work. However, I also explained that at this point, I could not give a formal opinion until I had completed the full evaluation. And when I did, I would follow up with him. Once I completed the report, I gave a copy to the client. The client raised concerns about issues in my report. I did correct minor errors, but I didn't correct anything substantial as this evaluation at that point had been complete and it was driven by data. Despite that the client disagreed with my opinions and recommendations in the report based on my findings, I did feel that she was safe to return to work. Part of my job was to provide an opinion as to whether or not she can safely return to work and to provide a rationale, details explaining my rationale in a medical report, which I did both of. I also provided her with recommendations that I thought would address her ongoing concerns and to enhance her work performance. The client maintained her disappointment, which led me to suggest her to seek a second opinion as I didn't think it would be appropriate to change my findings. I appreciate the opportunity for you guys to allow me to speak today, and I'm happy to answer any questions. That's it.
Thank you, Dr. Merkin. Do any of the committee members have any questions to ask Mr. Akins or Dr. Merkin?
This is Dr. Meyer.
Yes, Dr. Meyer.
Hi, Dr. Merkin. Thank you for being here. A few questions I had. So I was a little bit confused about the inclusion or not of the document review. You said that originally you agreed that you would not be reviewing any records, but then in your report it says you did review the records, and in your statement you said you briefly reviewed them. Can you kind of tell me the distinctions there, and how thoroughly did you review them? How much was the report based on those?
So essentially, the client did not, in my report, I explicitly said documents reviewed, which did include the document that she provided to me initially from her employer, which basically addressed the concerns that led up to the evaluation and the points that were supposed to be addressed. So that was in part. Her report was not brought to my attention until after the evaluation, out of respect for her and due to the importance that she had expressed. I did review it briefly, Just as I do many of my, when I get a lot of documents, I will scan through them and sometimes I won't read it, you know, sentence by sentence or page by page, but I'll read through it to, I'll scan through it to look for keywords, key sentences, anything that would help address the referral question or issues. And when I find that, I will read that in depth. So that this, the correspondence didn't essentially add to my report, but it definitely strengthened my opinion. So it didn't change anything. It just strengthened it essentially. So I did rely upon it, but I did not read the whole 60-page document. And in an email that she had sent to me, she did state that she did not expect me to read the entire document, that I could use it as a reference, which okay. is essentially what I did if I felt that and when I felt that I needed it.
Okay. Next, you said that you spoke with the employer for the purpose of providing your opinion about safety to return to work. Mm-hmm. And not to acquire further information about the client. Mm-hmm. Yet in the report, there's a section where you are reporting the employer's comments about the client. And so again, I'm confused about the inconsistencies between what you're saying you did versus what we're seeing in the report.
Correct. So essentially that the paragraph that I wrote, some of it was the summary of what was the client's referral that was addressed by her supervisor. And then when I had approached her supervisor to discuss what my essentially preliminary opinion based on what I had, so what I collected so far, he did offer me additional information just to clarify that I understood what was being asked and if I had received the referral question, the referral document, and he just wanted to make sure that I had addressed all the issues, and he wanted to make sure that I understood the factors leading up to the request for the psychological evaluation.
Okay.
So perhaps I shouldn't have labeled it as clinical interview. Maybe I should have labeled it as something else, but.
Okay, thank you. Next, on the consent form, you state that you charge by the hour, and yet, and there it was written in $1,700. So how many hours did you spend on this exam, and scoring and writing, and what was the total? Because there was no, in your consent form, it said there'd be a separate payment agreement, which I could not find, or any billing statements or any documentation of how many hours you spent. So can you provide additional information about how you got to the $1,700 and how much of that was actually used?
So essentially, I do charge by the hour, and sometimes I will do a flat fee, or depending on the client, I also, if it's for family court, I might work with a retainer. In this case, I quoted her based on the time I anticipated it would take for me to do the evaluation. When we had spoke on the phone, she, you know, essentially said there was no collateral records to review and that I wouldn't have to consult with anybody. So I lowered the price to $1,700, and that essentially entailed the 4 hours that she was at my office. So the clinical interview, the testing, so the clinical interview, which let's say took about 2 hours each test, which took about an hour each, the scoring for the PAI, which was hand scored, which takes about, that takes about 30 minutes, and charging for the tests themselves, and then writing, analyzing and writing up the report.
And so is there any documentation of how many hours you spent, or what is your estimate of of how much time was spent on this total?
The total, with everything, it exceeded probably, I would say at this point, it exceeded 9 hours. But I anticipated for the entire thing approximately eight or nine hours.
And do you have any documentation of that time spent? All I could find was an hour of consultation with another psychologist, the 4 hours of actual interview. Any other documentation of your time?
Yeah, I have. I do. I have a timeline of, I documented basically like each hour and each thing that I did. I just I thought that I included it, but maybe I didn't.
I did not see it. Okay. And what about the payment agreement form? I couldn't find that either.
So because I agree, that's just a standard form that I use for my clients, but because I had given her a lower fee, it wouldn't have worked for her. Also, she didn't use a credit card to pay for it, and that form is typically for credit cards or check. And I think that she Venmo'd me, so it wouldn't have been appropriate to give her that one.
Okay. Then, in your report, you describe the entire RAT5. Let me just find that real quick. So in the section where you have it under reading comprehension, but then you talk about the entire RAT5. And then say it was used to determine reading level solely. Is that?
Yes.
Again, the just looking at the report, it's a bit confusing about what was done. So you only did the.
So I typically do the sentence completion subtest from the RAT5 standard for just about any evaluation that I do to ensure to assess for a baseline reading level so that the client can take the test individually. It's very brief, it's quick. And I just want to make sure that they're able to comprehend and understand the information provided in the MMPI and the PAI.
Okay. In your response, you submitted to us, you said that you've completed over 1,000 evaluations. How many have you done since you've been licensed, and how many evaluations have you done independently?
Since I've been licensed? That's a good question. 2 years. Maybe about... I would say anywhere from like 10 a month. So maybe like 200 to about, maybe more. I'm not exactly sure, but on average.
Okay. And you said that in your training, your training was focused on children and adolescents. At what point did you start working with adults?
My training was primarily on adolescents. When I did my internship and my postdoc, I was working with adults because I worked with juvenile court and family court and did evaluations for DCS. So I was working with adults at that point.
Okay. And do you have specialized training in neuropsychology? Did you do a neuropsychology postdoc?
I did. I did not. I did 1 year. So I completed my internship but I never pursued it. I never pursued the 2 years to have a formal specialization in it. So no.
So you did a year for internship. Did you do a formal postdoc?
I did do a formal postdoc, yes.
Okay, but not neuropsych?
Not in neuropsych, no.
Okay. And then I could not find anything in your final question. Couldn't find anything in your report about differential diagnosis and what any rule outs when considering a specific diagnosis, any rationale for discussing why you gave a particular diagnosis and why you did not give a particular diagnosis. And keep in mind, we can't discuss specific diagnoses in this forum, but can you explain to me why that's missing?
Why I did not include a differential diagnosis?
Why there was no discussion of how you got to your diagnosis and determined to provide a specific diagnosis versus other diagnoses.
Okay. Well, I feel that in my summary, I definitely outlined pretty much how I arrived at the diagnosis. And I think that I explained that. However, the reason that I didn't do differential diagnosis, I guess I mean, essentially, when I did diagnose, I definitely did do that. I referred to the DSM as I always do when I'm diagnosing constantly. I didn't do a differential diagnosis given the audience. I wasn't sure that it would be appropriate. So I did not provide a differential diagnosis, but I definitely did consider it. I just did not write it.
Okay. Thank you. Those are all my questions.
Okay. Dr. Bob?
Yes, Dr. Bohansky.
I have a few questions, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
Doctor, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I have a couple quick questions for you. Of those evaluations that you've completed, how many have been fitness for duty?
None.
Is this the first time you've ever done a fitness for duty evaluation?
This was not proposed to me as a fitness for duty evaluation, so I would not consider it a fitness for duty, as it was when the client did call me. I specifically told her that could not do a fitness for duty and that I would only be able to do a psychological evaluation. So that was clarified, and it was written to me in a document that they requested a psychological evaluation.
So there was no job task analysis?
I was asked to...
Somebody's doing a job and we're looking to see if they can continue doing the job. That one of the things we look at is a job task analysis to see what in fact that job involves. And right. I'm curious if you did that.
I did not do a full job task analysis. I was essentially in the document that was given to me. I was aware, or I was made note of what her tasks were on the job and what to look for and what to assess. And then the client, when I met with her, explained all the positions in her job that she's done and what she is going to go back to once she would return to the workforce.
Okay, so this was not a fitness for duty evaluation.
There was
no job task analysis.
No.
But you provided an opinion as to whether or not she, in fact, could return to work.
I provided an opinion with regards to her safety to return to work.
Okay. So then your report is primarily based, or your conclusion, rather, is primarily based upon a sense of mental status eval, dangerousness to others, to herself, and to her coworkers.
Yes, and to work in a public, and to work in the public. And navigate interpersonal relationships.
The instruments that you chose to support your interview conclusions or your clinical conclusions were helpful in what way?
The diagnostic testing that I used?
Yes.
So the MMPI is one of the most widely used tests for in clinical settings due to its reliability and validity. It helps assess psychopathology and look at interpersonal and intrapersonal relationships, which was part of one of the questions that I was asked to assess for. It helps look at behavioral issues, and it also looks at safety factors. And then I use the PAI because I wanted to, it would just give me a better idea of the client's response pattern and any symptoms that maybe weren't addressed in one, in the MMPI that may have been addressed in the PAI, and also would help confirm any diagnoses or opinions that I may have had or disconfirm them. So.
And your belief was that CR was safe to return to work, was competent and capable of doing her job.
Yes.
And presented no threat to her supervisors or the public.
Mm-hmm.
And you communicated that to her employer.
I did.
Concluding remarks based upon their questions that they provided to you.
I did, yes.
And are you still of that opinion today?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I am.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, the committee will now begin deliberation. Please note that the deliberation is the time for the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Meyer, since you're the lead on this, would you please begin the deliberation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was concerned about the conclusions drawn from this. Dr. Bohansky, I appreciate your focus on this as a fitness for duty evaluation. It felt that the level of experience and training of Dr. Merkin does not seem to be appropriate for this type of evaluation. I was concerned with the large number of errors in the report and the lack of response to the complainant that those errors weren't addressed other than changing some pronouns, but the typos, the grammatical errors, the misinterpretations, and then the severity of the diagnosis. Also, I struggled to see that fit. It's possible, but there was no alternative explanation, no inclusion of how to justify that. So I went back and forth on, was there an ethical violation versus is this just a poor product? And I'm interested in your thoughts on that, Dr. Bohansky.
Dr. Meyer, thank you. I have several opinions and one of them is that we often call different products different things. if someone's in trouble at work and an employer is asking, can this person work safely? I automatically think of that as a fitness for duty evaluation. And a fitness for duty evaluation is something that I think is not within the scope that the doctor has practiced prior. and I think it involves several components that we're missing. But She has labeled this a psychological evaluation, not a fitness for duty evaluation, and has proceeded to provide this as a psychological evaluation, where she's tagging on a conclusion that as a result of the psychological evaluation, the client is not dangerous or inappropriate to be in a public or work setting. So there are two distinctive kind of pieces here. Testing is testing, interviewing is interviewing. A good psychologist can do a good clinical interview, follow up with psychometry to support their conclusions or to prick them to look on a different avenue that they may have missed in their clinical interview. But by and large, most of us go by our impressions of what we see when we're with the client, and psychometry in its very limited form, just being a mirror snapshot of a particular point in time, is nothing more than potentially confirmatory or in some ways asking us to take another peek. I put little faith in diagnosis and its reliability. The question for me is there anything in the diagnostic statement that would impact upon the patient's ability to perform her duties? And many people with diagnosis perform their duties just well, and that's not a problem. Is there a differential? You know, there's probably a differential, but we've lost that as an art, seemingly, in doing our formulations. I haven't seen a decent formulation in a psych report in years, where somebody literally sits down and goes through and does an actual clinical formulation, indicating rule outs and arriving at a diagnosis. Was that necessary here? For the purposes of a dangerousness evaluation, probably not. For the purposes of a fitness for duty evaluation, probably not, unless there were key indicators of a history that would have tripped me along those lines to be more cautious in my statements. Ethical issues. For me, the only ethical issue here, and it's an edgy one, is does doing thousands of evaluations for children's programs or children and family in distress qualify you to do fitness for duty evaluations, whatever you label them? Or was the doctor's experience in postdoc training sufficient enough to provide her with a good background to do a good solid clinical evaluation? I like her approach. I think doing an extended interview is the majority of your clinical information. She used appropriate testing, if in fact it was a psychological evaluation, making sure that the client had the reading and understanding level, and then proceeding into instruments that are recognized instruments to assist her in validating her clinical impressions from interview. Is sloppy report writing an ethical issue? It's another one of my bugaboos, in that we seem to have lost the art of training students to write clear, clean, crisp, and accurate reports. I'm getting sick of reading texties in them. I'm getting sick of reading grammatical errors in them. But is that in and of itself an ethical violation? No, I don't find that. The bottom line for me is a psychologist is hired to answer questions for an employer. The employer says, I need to know X, Y, and Z. The psychologist has a reasonable shot at meeting with the employee, finding out what the answers to X, Y, and Z are, and providing those back to the employer. Now, the psychologist has no control over what the employer does with that. The report and opinion from the psychologist is that client is fine to return to work and is safe, and the employer acts on that in whichever way they choose. That's outside of the psychologist's control, and if those things don't match up, then I feel sorry for it, but was not at the result of management or mismanagement by the psychologist. So that leaves me back with, can we trust a licensed clinical psychologist to do a psychological evaluation that's going to be used in part as a duty to perform type evaluation? Yes, I think those things are done all the time. I wish that when employers were looking for specific duty to perform evaluations, that those were done by people who have done those. And unfortunately, it's hard to find someone because they don't label themselves that way. So you get a psych eval masquerading as a fitness for duty eval, and it was used as such. So those are my thoughts. Your picture moved on my screen. I got to find you again. Those are my thoughts as I look at it. I cannot label a glaring violation of statute or rule, if that's your question for me. I can talk to you all day about what I think psychologists should be further trained in terms of understanding the dynamics of fitness for duty eval and job task analysis and some of the things that are left out. But clearly that's not what was asked for here. It was, is this person safe? Psychologist says this person is safe based upon a clinical impression and appropriate instruments being used to support that clinical impression.
Thank you, Dr. Bohansky. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, is there a motion?
I would make a motion to dismiss this complaint.
I will second
that.
Is
there a second? Thank you, Dr. Meyer. Thank you, Dr. Bohansky. There is a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. The motion carries. The complaint is dismissed.
Thank you, committee members.
So moving on to agenda item number 5, it's adjournment time. Do I hear a motion?
I move.
Seconded.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. The motion carries. The meeting is adjourned, and it's 9:19 a.m. Thank you, everyone.